Okay, we are live once more, and today's topic is mental health and especially the role of technology, in particular AI robots, in all of this. And tomorrow is Mental Health Day, so it's a really important topic, and a topic that I think has come onto the radar of so many more people, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, which I believe has been pretty devastating when it comes to the impact on people's mental health. So today we want to discuss this topic, and I'm super pleased to say I'm joined here today by Emily He from Oracle and Dan Schwabel from Workplace Intelligence. So Dan, Emily, welcome.
Very
Thank
happy
you
to
for
be here
having
with
us.
You.
Now, I'm really happy to have you here. So let's start with you, Emily. You're the Senior Vice President for Human Capital Management at Oracle. What does that involve? Maybe you can give us a little background on yourself and what you do for Oracle.
Sure. Yes, indeed. I'm the Global Head of Marketing for Cloud Human Capital Management Solution at Oracle. I've been in enterprise software for 20 years, and I've led marketing for human capital management, enterprise resource planning, supply chain, CRM. I would say out of all the markets I've been in, HCM is the most fascinating because we are all employees, managers, or senior leaders. So we all have firsthand experience with many of the issues that we talk about with our customers. I am personally really fascinated by the way technology is reshaping human connections and impacting our life and work and business. And I'm fascinated by the ever-evolving relationship between machines and humans. A core aspect of my role is understanding the impact of new technologies in the workplace and helping our customers adapt to the new needs of the market. I personally spend a lot of time listening to our customers and employees to understand the latest challenges impacting the workplace so we can design and market our solutions accordingly.
Perfect. Very good. And Dan, you are a New York Times bestselling author and the managing partner of Workplace Intelligence. Again, maybe you can give us a little bit of your background.
Thank you. Well, I'm pretty obsessed with all things HR and work life. I've led over 50 studies, thousands of articles, 3 books, just really immersed in this. I've reviewed over 8,000 secondary reports over the past decade or so. My original background was I worked at a EMC before it was EMC Dell and created the first social media position. So I have a deep background in marketing, and I have applied those marketing skills, including marketing research, as well as my, you know, promotional skills to really not just lead studies with wonderful people like Emily and Oracle, but get them out there. Because I think, especially with this study, it's the more you talk about mental health, the more you lower and remove the stigma from society. And the number one reason why people don't seek help is because of the stigma. And I think mental health at work is the number one most important trend, at least for the next decade. Before COVID, hundreds of millions of people were burned out, suffered from depression, anxiety, and stress. And now, based on, you know, this new study we're going to be talking about, it's worsened, it's heightened, it's become something that affects everyone, because you either currently suffer mental health problems, you have in the past, you may in the future, or you interact with someone who does. So you could be a CEO, you could be a manager, a VP, and you're leading a team where people are suffering, and you might or might not know, because unlike physical pain and injuries, you can't see it. It's happening in someone's head. And it deeply affects their work, because if you are burned out, or if you're depressed or really stressed out, that's all you're thinking about all day. And so how are you supposed to focus and do the best work possible if that's happening? And so working with Oracle, like Emily and I both agree on this, we're like, we know that the workplace will be, you know, partially led by humans and partially led by technology, AI, you know, machines. And we're really trying to examine what that relationship looks like and the roles and responsibilities for robots and humans as it relates, in this case, to mental health, but a variety of topics. So I couldn't be more proud to work on this study. I think it's, in terms of scope and size and impact, I think it's the biggest one that I've led ever. And what we really want to get out of it is not to just shine the light on the problem that we're all facing. I mean, I think most people would nod their head if you said, hey, you know, we have a mental health epidemic, but actually provide a solution. And in this case, that is partially technology.
Very much. I very much agree. It feels very much like mental health is on the agenda now, and it has been on the agenda for a long time, but this has now been accelerated and amplified. So, Emily, your take on this, why is mental health such an important issue today? Why does it matter?
Like both you and Dan said, mental health has always been an important topic for our society, and it was already a huge issue even before the pandemic. But the pandemic has definitely made it worse. COVID has impacted every country, every business, every organization, every family, every individual. And overnight, people had to make all these dramatic changes. They had to all of a sudden work from home, even when they didn't have an environment to work from home properly. People are losing their jobs. They have friends and family who have health challenges. Their kids are doing school from home when they have to work. So people in the meantime are also working many more hours because we don't know how to draw the line between work and life. And we're just sitting in the same place all day and people are feeling incredibly burned out. More importantly, there's a great sense of uncertainty. Even now, it feels like there's no end in sight and there's no real solution to the pandemic. And because of all these disruption and uncertainty, people have much higher level of stress, anxiety, and fear. And that's not only impacting their personal lives, their family lives, but is impacting the productivity in the workplace. So I think the one thing, like you are both talking about before, the one thing the pandemic has made all of us realize is that we're all humans, first and foremost, and there's no longer a distinction between personal issues and workplace issues. I hope that's one of the lasting legacy of the pandemic. I hope the pandemic will help us remove the stigma related to mental health. But employees right now want their employers to step in and help with their mental health challenges. And mental well-being has to rise to the top of every organization's agenda.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'd like to add one more thing is that the reason why I didn't, focus on marketing when I was stepping in and starting my own business and I wanted to use my marketing skills in HR is because I always felt that if you improve people's work lives, you're also improving their entire lives. Because if someone's having a horrible day at work, that comes into the home. And I think now that is, like Emily was saying, that is so clear. If you're having a horrible day, if you have a bad Zoom call, right, if you're very frustrated, you walk 3 feet and you're going to probably yell at your husband or not wanting to deal with your kids. Like, it's all there. There's no hiding from anything else. And think of COVID as the gasoline that's been poured on all of these workplace trends, much like, mental health is on the agenda. Remote work was like not really completely on the agenda even last year or in January. Mm-hmm. And now all these trends you can't avoid. And it's actually, they're meant to save us and support us in our work lives.
Yeah, I completely agree. So this whole blending of work life and personal life where people don't have the buffer anymore of sitting in a car driving home for an hour to calm down after they've had a bad meeting. And even though for companies, productivity has gone up initially because people could work much better at home, which lots of companies realized, with this also came a lot more stress. People were working longer hours, absolutely. So it was interesting that the government in the UK has just done a study as well, and the National Office of Statistics here, and they have called it the perfect storm, that basically COVID, together with all the changes, people are scared not only for their health, but for their jobs, for the economy, uncertainty, lots of change. So this is just amplifying everything. So what we want to talk about today partly is a survey, a bit of research that Oracle has just done together with you, Dan. Do you want to describe a little bit of what the motivation for the study was?
Sure. So we interviewed over 12,000 of the C-suite of HR leaders, managers, and employees in 11 countries. And we wanted to do this survey because we realized that, hey, mental health affects people at every single level. And we really wanted to compare and contrast, you know, country, because, you know, COVID impacts, like Emily was saying, the whole world. And COVID doesn't care if you're in the C-suite. It doesn't care if you're an employee. It doesn't care, you know, what your race, class, gender is. Like, it's going to affect you, right? I mean, it affects people in different ways depending on age and gender, and we can get into all of that. But for the most part, we wanted to have a full approach to the study. So we're really examining the workplace. We're going out and we're researching and seeing, okay, who's being affected and why, and what can we do about this? Because it's not just about highlighting the problem. And the problem is, what we found in the study is, this is the most stressful year of people's existence, especially the C-suite, who has to manage from the top. And not only that, but actually think about the solutions, right? And in this case, I think what we really uncovered, and based on what Emily's talked about for years and what I'm fascinating too, is, hey, what's technology's role? Because we know that companies are investing more in technology in order to have a scalable solution right now, and provide and be innovative and whatnot and stay relevant. But how does technology help people's mental health, and how are people interacting with technology, and what is technology providing people that maybe humans don't? And so I think that this study is the first, there's, you know, other mental health studies. This study is the first to say, hey, we know what the problem is. We're going to reinforce that this is a problem and validate that for you. But we're also going to say, okay, what can we do about it? And I think that's what makes this study unique. And because we examined it at all different levels and did many, many cuts, I think we have something very interesting and compelling to share.
Absolutely. So Emily, what would you say have been your the key findings for you from the research that you've just completed?
There are so many findings in the study, some of which are not surprising and others are quite surprising. So what we found is 70% of the people believe year 2020 has been the most stressful year ever. I think that's the understatement of the century. Everyone can relate to that. And the pandemic has negatively impacted the mental health of 78% of the workforce, according to the survey. And the other finding is people are working a lot more. And I still remember when I was first told to work from home, I was like, woohoo, now I don't have to commute anymore. So I'll be working out and I'll be in the best shape ever. A week later, I realized all I did was work 24/7 because I didn't know how to stop. And I think this is happening to a lot of people. Based on our survey, 52% of the people say they're now working at least 5 hours per week more since the pandemic. And 35% of the people say they're working 10 more hours every week. And that's 40 hours per week. In some countries, this percentage is much bigger. So we have now empirical evidence that people are working more. The mental health issue is impacting both people's personal life and then their productivity in the workplace, is impacting their family relationships, impacting their sleep patterns, is causing poor physical health, reduced happiness at home. So not only is it a personal issue, it's also a workplace issue. The surprising thing is employees actually want to turn to technology for help. 68% of the people say they would prefer to talk to a robot over their manager about stress and anxiety at work. And 80% of the people say they're actually open to having robots as a therapist or a counselor. So these are some of the surprising findings for me personally. The other thing is employees definitely want their organizations to step in and help. More than 80% of the employees say they believe it's their organization's responsibility to provide support to mental health in the workplace.
Emily, well, do you mind touching this one thing? Emily did like a man on the street where she asked certain people what they felt about those findings, that whether they turned to a robot. Emily, can you share some of those responses? They were really good.
Well, yeah, there are a variety of responses. Some people say, no, no way. There's no way I'm going to talk to a robot about my mental health. Some people say, hey, why not? Why don't we try something new? And other people say, absolutely, because if you talk, there's still stigma associated with mental health. And the technology offers a judgment-free zone. And also you can access technology 24/7 and get help whenever you want.
Absolutely. We'll hopefully get into the technology aspect of in a bit more detail later, because this is so fascinating. And it's actually, for me, one of the case studies for things like artificial intelligence, because if you have a really good tool that takes away, well, there are lots of studies that found that people are more honest when they don't fear to be judged by a human, and so they're more open and more transparent and find it a really safe environment. Before we go on, I just want to say hello to a few people on this stream, because it's always nice to have people from all over the world joining us in here. So hi, Nimita from South Africa, from Johannesburg. I've got Amanda here from Fort Worth. We have Benedicta from Nigeria. We have someone from Brazil, from India, from the United Arab Emirates, from Morocco, from Austria. It's always so amazing to see people from all over the world joining, from Egypt and so on. So please feel free to let us know where you're from, but also let us know what your feelings and views are on mental health in general and mental health in the workplace in particular, and maybe what you think the role of technology could play in all of this. Mm-hmm. So Dan, companies now obviously have to put this on their radar. It has to become a really important topic for organizations. What can they do? What can organizations actually do? How can they help to create a better working environment? How can they support people with their mental health? Have you got any good examples of what organizations do in practice?
Sure. Yeah. The company that I've looked at for, I think it's been like a year now, and I read all their press releases and I own stock and whatever it is Starbucks. And so I think Starbucks, because they've now issued like multiple releases on all the work that they've done. They've done like virtual town halls. But the more interesting thing that they did was recent. I think it was during May in the pandemic, where they offered every employee 20 free hours of virtual therapy. And I think that's interesting because, and I think, you know, technology enables therapists, a lot of them, to keep their jobs, right? So it gives them an opportunity to continue to work, but it's also good for employees because sometimes you need that personal assistance. And then you see many companies that are partnering with technology vendors because they don't have that access on their own. They're not going to develop a lot of these tools on their own. So they give access to resources. I mean, Oracle does that. Then they have access to, you know, apps like Headspace and various other ones that provide mindfulness, meditation, you know, exercises, different things that really help people in terms of burnout and their just overall mental state. So I think it's partnerships, resources, access to personal therapy. You know, in a normal world, you have companies like, you know, Chase Bank. There's a whole website they have that's public for their employee assistant program and how they help people. And so a lot of companies are doing this. I would say EY, the MBA, Johnson & Johnson. There are a few standouts, but it's not as widespread as you think. Like it is definitely still challenging and not widespread enough, but I think that's going to change. I think we're at a tipping point, because now if you're looking for a job, when you're evaluating employers, it's not just what it has normally been for young people. It's typically, you know, after salary, of course, it's, you know, healthcare coverage, career opportunities, health and flexibility. Flexibility actually is number one right now for young people. And then as you know, the older population they usually just swap one of these out for retirement benefits, and healthcare usually is higher than flexibility, but that might have changed. The difference now is health and safety and well-being is towards the top, because when you're thinking about where to work for, you're thinking about what safety precautions have they taken. You know, are they going to be supporting my overall health, physical health, mental health, et cetera? And so, like, these questions are being asked, and they weren't even a year ago. And that's why, as Emily and you have said, it's now a priority. It's not just a nice to have. It's something that has to be part of the employee benefit toolkit that is conveyed not just to current workers, but for the future generations of the workforce. Especially because what we found is younger generations are suffering more than older generations. And that's counter to what a lot of people would think. But no, younger people are way more stressed out. And that is validated by the American Psychological Association. They found that out like a year ago too. So we just further validated that for the workforce globally.
Very good. Yeah. And just having those discussions regularly, I think, is really important. And people asking for certain services, I think that, and I feel there are still big differences across the world, where certain parts of the world, like the US, probably here in the UK, people do open up, whereas then in other parts of the world, there's still a big stigma around mental health. I believe some countries don't even have words for mental health in particular. So it's important that we talk about this topic.
I would say the UK has done a better job than any country. Yeah, I mean, I've been in the UK for like a year, and everything that they had, they were on their second minister of loneliness, right? Mm-hmm. And in the UK, there's chat benches, which, you know, people wouldn't want to do it now, but it was a way to for people to meet other people so they wouldn't feel isolated. So, and that's just like simple. There's way more than that. I mean, they have groups of people who write letters to senior citizens. The doctors prescribe volunteer activities instead of medicine to some people who are experiencing mental health problems. So the UK has done a lot. Like we should do more. And they have the employer pledge. So they have, I think, between 800 and 900 companies who have signed on and saying, hey, mental health is important. And the government provides a toolkit that they can use to train managers and support mental health at work to make it okay to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We need to adopt this.
Absolutely.
So Harry did a campaign about it.
Sorry?
Prince Harry.
Yes.
Has a whole mental health. Oprah.
Yeah, but both of the princes have done a big campaign. There's it feels like in the media, there's a lot of attention at the moment. People opening up, big stars open up, sports stars saying, I've had issues and we need to talk about it. So this is all a move in the right direction. Emily, do you have any other really good examples that you've seen of what companies could do to help with all of this? It's always good for anyone listening to actually get some examples of what we could do differently.
Definitely. We talk to organizations from around the world all the time about what they're grappling with. And I have to give a shout out to our HR team. I think during COVID, they were kind of being sandwiched between employees and organizations, and they really have to lead the charge. So in many ways, the HR teams have to come together and figure this out. There's no blueprint to addressing a crisis like this, and you have to improvise solutions. I remember when COVID first happened, we talked to our customers, and for the most part, we're hearing about concerns with health and safety. So how do you ensure employees are safe, they are healthy? How do you track infection cases, and how do you implement measures to keep their workplace clean if their employees still need to go to work? Now, mental health has indeed risen to be the top topic. And like I said, there's no blueprint to how you implement mental health solutions. So companies are just experimenting with different things. And according to our survey, the good news is 51% of the organizations have stepped up their support and services to mental health. And what we heard are a variety of things. So a common theme is many organizations are implementing digital listening tools to really understand where employees are mentally, what needs they have so they can address those needs. And they do this through pulse survey, where sometimes weekly, sometimes even more frequent than that. Many organizations have also stepped up communication. Because when you're working from home, there's a sense of isolation and disconnection from the company. It's really important for them to hear from the leaders directly. So many companies are holding open Q&A with executives, ask me anything sessions, and they're doing this online or doing this virtually. The other thing we heard from many of the HR teams is many companies have employee assistance program, which includes free counseling benefits or access to mental health professionals. But many employees are not aware of it because there's stigma associated with mental health, so people don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So we've heard many of our customers raising awareness around the employee assistance program and making people aware that they can actually contact a mental health professional. I read an article recently from HR executive, and they said the utilization rate for EAP programs is only 11%, 10% across the board. So that's something we're doing. Then there are kind of more fun things. So many companies are trying to offer practical relief for their employees. For example, there's a company called Wilbur Labs. They used to have in-office breakfast for lunch, but now they can't do this anymore because their employees are working remotely. So they're offering to reimburse people for their lunch bills and breakfast bills. And this is great because employees continue to feel connected. Netflix, for example, they're offering backup childcare services or access to childcare services to help parents go through this period when their kids are schooling from home. I also read that PepsiCo, they have partnered with virtual education and tutoring services to help parents who have kids who are studying from home or who are not going to school at all. And many companies have extended, including Oracle, extended their paid leave for employees to take care of their family or friends who have been impacted by COVID. And other companies like Ally Financials, they're offering free financial planning support, including access to certified planners or credit monitoring. So companies are doing a lot. The other thing we've heard is many companies are, and this is not something they've done before, are encouraging employees to take care of themselves. So self-care, either by offering a free day, like in the early days, Cisco offered this recharge day on Friday. So everyone gets to take off, to take a mental break. Some companies are offering wellness stipend so they can supplement gym classes and things like that. I was just having a conversation with the head of HR yesterday from National Instruments, and they have a great gym, but now people can't go to the gym anymore. So they've taken their fitness class online, and people can continue to exercise even when they're working virtually. Jen already mentioned the free access to meditation apps and fitness apps, which is fantastic. And many companies also, they're encouraging their managers to not just focus on work, but also organize virtual happy hours and virtual games, virtual talent show, so people can still have a sense of connection and get to know each other casually outside work. So those are some of the key themes we've heard.
Very good. There's one other part to this too. Part of why the stigma affects people so bad, especially right now, is because we're still in this recession. So people are afraid that if they talk about their stress and anxiety, it's like, well, other people are facing that too. Like, I don't want to come off as the complainer. And if they do that, they think there'll be career repercussions, because if there's another layoff, they might be laid off because they're the ones who complained or wouldn't work an extra hour. And so what we're really saying, and part of why we interviewed, you know, the C-suite, is because, hey, this is a C-level conversation. We have to, it's a cultural thing to make it okay to talk about mental health at work. And the good thing that we found that was great, like originally when Emily and I connected on this, I think it was in January, one of the things that I was curious about is, we've studied before, you know, can technology reduce the amount of hours spent working? And so we found during COVID that people are working, you know, upwards of five or so more hours because they're not commuting, like Emily said. But overall, can technology get to a point where we're actually reducing hours? So we're reducing our work week, which will eventually, you know, eliminate or, you know, alleviate burnout issues. And that's what we found in the study. you know, the use of artificial intelligence more specifically, it enhances well-being, it lowers the amount of time spent working, number of hours spent. But it also, which was really cool, is it makes people want to take or allows people to take more vacation days. And based on, you know, studies, you know, that I've seen in the past is the amount of vacation days. And of course now, like, where are you going to go? But in general, people were taking fewer vacation days per year. And I think that as technology, you know, becomes more sophisticated, we're already so dependent on it. AI is controlling our lives and we're not even thinking about it. But as these technologies get better, as people are using them more, as companies are investing in adopting them in this training so employees know how to use them, you know, the hope is that in the future, we're going to have reduced work weeks and therefore reduced burnout and stuff. Because you have to admit, like, technology in sense, you're kind of working, you can work 24/7 because you're always plugged in. But if the technology gets good enough, we think that we've reached this point where how many hours more can we possibly work? The technology improves. So now we might swing the other way around. And I think this study is the first study that really shows, hey, as this is improving, maybe we can turn around and work fewer hours, take more vacations and live better lives. That's what I'm hopeful for.
I'm hopeful for that too. I think it's really important for companies to recognize that this transition that we've gone through has actually boosted productivity for most of them. And even if they're not feeling it because there's so much other business change going on, they need to acknowledge that people are working harder than ever. And actually, if this carries on, they will simply burn out. So it's a really important issue for them to. I think there's always a temptation for companies to say, okay, productivity has gone up, great, let's push people a bit more. But actually understanding the impact of all of this is fine.
And this happens, Bernard, this happens because the mantra coming out of the 2008 recession was do more work with fewer resources. So maximizing employees, but fewer employees. So that puts more pressure on each employee. And now, of course, with this another recession and the pandemic, that's even more. So there's so much more pressure, which increases productivity, but that productivity comes at a cost and eventually we become counterproductive. And, you know, as the economy gets better, you might lose those employees to other companies that care way more about employee health and well-being. And therefore, having employee assistance programs like Emily's talking about, investing in them, like we found in the study that, you know, workers, even the C-suite thinks that they should have stronger, you know, programs that support health and well-being of their employees, that will become a competitive edge. Much like people almost expect to have some degree of flexibility when searching for a job now, safety and health and wellness is going to be right up there too.
Absolutely.
And Bernard, I found your comment to be so interesting because before the pandemic, many companies are still requiring their employees to go to work, not because it makes them more productive, but simply because a FaceTime. They think it's important for people to show up. And many executives, maybe they don't say this openly, but they believe when people are working from home, they're not really working. They're not working as hard. But I think the pandemic, when we're all working from home, there's a collective awareness or realization that people actually work harder when they work from home. So I hope one of the lasting legacy of the pandemic is remote work will be here to stay. And when people do go back to the office, they go back to the office with a clear purpose because they want to collaborate with other teams where they want to do ideation, brainstorm. So I hope the result of this is a much healthier balance between remote work and going to the office.
Yeah, quick add on to that, which I think is interesting is, so there is not one study that I found that says that remote workers are less productive. There's a ton of studies and they all say that they're more productive, but they're less trusted, AKA there's a stigma around it. And FaceTime, it's, you can build trust quicker and in a different way when you're in person with someone. So I think that's also important. So remote work's fine, but I think that at some point you need some degree of human interaction. And going back to the study, everyone's in a different life circumstance right now, right? And so I think one of the big takeaways, not just from employee assistance programs and programmatic wise, but also like can we show more empathy to our workers in our workforce? Right? Like someone might have kids, they might have two kids, one might have be pregnant. One might have just got COVID. Like, it, one might be living in an area that, you know, is densely populated and they're scared. Like, people are going through so many different things right now, maybe financially too, financial wellness. So I think we have to be more empathetic because people are coming at this in our different life situations. And if we do that, and if we make it okay for them to speak out about their troubles, like, you know, let them swear once in a while, I don't know, right? Like, just let them voice what they're feeling. The workplace naturally or and organically will become way better. And part of that is happening. I've talked to a lot of my friends who engage in what Emily said about like these happy hours, but also like these check-ins. Like, a lot of companies are doing check-ins, like, how are you doing? It's really that simple too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you once you ask someone how they're doing, and even if you say, hey, like, I've been so stressed today, or I'm not feeling well, or whatever, like, that gives the person you're talking to permission to reciprocate, right? Yeah, like, you leave and say, hey, this week, I know it's been hard for all of us. Like, for me specifically, I couldn't sleep last night because of my mental health or whatnot. Like, that person you're talking to who is an associate and you're a manager, the associate's going to be like, oh, okay, now that gives me permission to also say that I'm going through something similar.
Yeah, and I think this
being vulnerable enables other people to also reciprocate and be vulnerable, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, completely. And I think if you are in a physical working environment, these things, I guess, happen more naturally, where you just have a minute with someone, you sit down around the water cooler and you say, how are you? Whereas it feels like in our Zoom controlled world, everything has a purpose nowadays. And I think it's really important to have sometimes these check-ins with absolutely no agenda, to say, just have a conversation and give people some space to talk. And a friend of mine works for a company and they do this every Friday. So the team gets together and the company sends them a little treat parcel, sometimes some biscuits, sometimes a selection of gins, whatever, and they have a little happy hour together and they all hop on a Zoom call and they just talk. And for me, I think it's a real challenge for companies to maintain this company culture somehow in this new normal.
And it goes into this bigger picture. More is being expected of companies than ever before, way more. And part of that more is mental health. You know, what, as a company, what are you doing to support my mental health and well-being? Right? Mm-hmm. What are you doing and what stances are you taking on political issues? What do you believe about these social, you know, social unrest going on in the country? What is, you know, what are you doing about my learning and development? Like, the expectations on companies have never been greater, whether that's right or wrong. It's just what it is. That's what society is looking for, is for companies to step up. And so I think that one of the ways in which companies can set up to meet the new standard and expectations of the workforce and society is by offering more as it relates to mental health. And I think when you really think about humans and robots and the future of work, the qualities that make us the most human are going to be the most valuable. So if you double down on being human, when certain technologies maybe automate some of the jobs out in the future, the human element, the human skills, the soft skills are going to become way more important. And the study reiterates that, right? Because people can understand the pressures of what it's like to have, you know, a job or your job. They can relate to your feelings in a way that, you know, robots can't. So we're not saying that, hey, you know, bypass humans altogether and just, you know, take advice from a robot. No, it's this combination of humans and technology coming together to scale and solve human related issues.
Yeah, very true. Yeah.
This is where, when we work remotely, this is where the need to be more human, but the need to also use technology to connect, to do any work, they come together. So we have to, on one hand, use more technology, but on the other hand, we also have to make technology more human to really serve our human needs.
Very true. And one of the things that I found astonishing in this study was that it found that 82% of people believe that robots can support their mental health better than humans. So there is obviously a role for technology in all of this. What would you say, Emily, are some of the key things? So we talk about AI, we talk about robots, we talk about cloud, we talk about all these different technologies. What are some of the things? How can technology help us with mental health?
I mean, the thing is, people are already doing that in their day-to-day lives. People are using fitness apps to measure their sleep, to measure their exercise, and use that data to inform them of how they can improve the quality of their life. They're already interacting in a conversational way with things like Alexa or Siri, and they're using language to access support and help. And employees simply want the same experience when they come to work. So the underlying technology is already there. What it requires is for businesses and HR teams to put mental health at the top of their agenda and design solutions accordingly. For example, when we join a company, we always have an onboarding process. Now, why don't we have a mental health journey or process where you can guide employees through a set of best practices, whether it's setting up the right ergonomically friendly environment at home, or designing your schedule to incorporate physical activities, or even managing nutrition and connecting with other employees. If you can give employees guidance in a way that's easy for them to consume, whether it's by laying out a journey or simply enabling the digital assistant to provide that information, that would be superb. The other thing is, companies are already using digital assistant to enable their employees to access their paycheck information, get expense reports approved through text or through just talking to your mobile phone or talking in a conversational way to your laptop. Why not do the same thing when it comes to mental health? So if you can train the digital assistant to provide the right information, advice in terms of leveraging resources as part of the employee assistance program, that will be a huge help for employees. The thing I find fascinating when it comes to technology is the employees using technology as fellow digital assistant or fellow coworkers is not new, but there's an added dimension to mental health, which is there's a sense of stigma related to mental health, and people want a judgment-free zone. They want a safe place where they can ask these questions, and that's the role technology can play. Technology is available 24/7. You can ask questions anytime you want in a completely private way, and you can get to help faster.
Yeah, and I guess lots of people's health issues, mental health issues, I had a conversation with a colleague earlier, and we were saying that they usually nowadays start on Google, right? You say, okay, I've got these symptoms, what could this be? And even if you then, during this exploration, if you could then have more help immediately, rather than going to a doctor, being referred to someone, the waiting lists are getting longer and longer. So having technology to help with this immediately, I think is really powerful. Dan, do you have any, what are some of your favorite examples of how technology can help with mental health?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it is, your therapist doesn't want to get a phone call at 4 or 5 in the morning, but you can use your phone to get the answers to your health related questions during that time. Meaning that machines are available 24/7, but humans aren't. And so machines augment the human experience and can provide additional value. And going back to what Emily said, which is really important, is yeah, like, you know, you feel like you're being judged if you talk about how you're feeling. And people don't want that, especially in today's society where people are comparing their lives to others on social media. And, you know, that creates some, you know, depression or anxiety because there's a fear of missing out as well. Mm. And so there's this interesting negative view in our culture about technology that has definitely been brought forth by the Netflix show, the Social Dilemma. And I think that it isn't black or white. Like, technology can be good, but have side effects. And you have to examine the full picture of technology and how to use it in a way in which it brings value. And I think this study just reiterates that, yeah, you can get questions to your health related. And the thing is, people are more reliant on technology than ever before because they've been forced to, right? People like technology, but during COVID, like, you wouldn't be able to work remote 50 years ago. And because of that, the unemployment rate would be 30%. I mean, it would be a total collapse of everything, right? And so you have to look at it like that, is technology has powered the remote workplace, and technology has improved, scaled, augmented the mental support that, you know, we don't have a billion therapists, right? We have a certain amount of therapists, but then you have technology that enhances and scales their ability to perform, as well as providing other resources that are available around the clock. So I think it goes back to the combination.
Yeah, Dan, this is such an important point. I think when it comes to mental health, the other issue is humans are usually not adequate in addressing mental health issues. So if someone comes to you and you're not a trained therapist and that person says, I feel stressed or depressed, our natural response is, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, that's not helpful. So technology, especially digital assistant, is a great way to scale best practices when it comes to addressing mental health. You can train technology to go through a set of questions and guide employees in the right direction. The other thing is, Dan mentioned the movie Social Dilemma. I think that movie painted a very dark picture about how technology is negatively impacting people's mindset and mental health. And I really hope the pandemic is going to serve as the call for arms for the technology community to design technology around mental health, to promote mental health. It is possible. There are ways we can nudge people when they're spending too much time online or in Zoom meetings to maybe walk around and do some exercise. There are nutrition tips or sleep tips we can push through technology. So there are definitely ways technology can collaborate with human to promote mental health.
Yeah, very true, very true. And anyone listening, if you want to just put your thoughts into the comments, let us know what you think about the topic. Let us think about, have you seen other companies doing this well? Any examples you want to share? Anything we're saying that you disagree with? Put it all out there for us to have a look at. In terms of the future, then, if you are looking beyond the current situation, and hopefully at some point we'll get control of this virus and get over this and have a proper new normal. Nobody knows whether this will be the new normal or whether we'll have a slightly better new normal, which is everyone hoping for, I guess. But looking ahead, what are some of your hopes and predictions for the future, Emily, when it comes to mental health?
Yeah, for me personally, the reason we did this study is not just to talk about the role of technology, but the main goal is to raise awareness around mental health in the workplace and ask all organizations to prioritize mental health. 76% of workers, according to our survey, believe their companies should be doing more, and 84% of the remote workers are facing serious mental health challenges. Mental health knows no boundary between work and home, and mental health is health, period, and it needs to be at the top of every organization's agenda. From a technology perspective, I think many organizations are working on advancing AI machine learning to provide more help from a mental health perspective, either in detecting mental health through natural language processing, predicting, and also training our conversational agents or chatbot to better provide guidance and tips to humans when it comes to mental health challenges. So I'm very hopeful that more solutions will come to play, and between organizations prioritizing this and technology advancing, I hope we can provide much more support and help to employees who are facing mental health challenges.
Very good. So Dan, what are your predictions and hopes for the future?
I think there's one thing that's inevitable. There's a few things. One, you're born, you die, you pay taxes, And there's only 24 hours in a single day. And that last part is really important because, you know, we're not going to be able to work 24 hours in a day. Like all of this technology is inevitable because we're human. And so in order to best maximize our day, because every generation, regardless of who you talk to, they all want to have work and life, disregarding company or country. And in order to make this happen, in order to have a healthy, not just workforce, but overall society, you need to understand the role of humans in technology. And then you need to be able to ensure that both are have their duties and responsibilities accounted for. And when that happens, then you create more knowledge workers, you create more innovations in this space, and you make it even possible to exist, because there's no way in the future that people are going to be working, you know, 24 hours a day. Like, you just can't do that. You're still human. It's not, it's in our day, in our DNA, that we just will eventually burn out and be counterproductive. So I think that this technology is extremely important to enabling us to even have a future. But I do have, there is a warning of, you know, just trying to make sure that, as Emily said, it's built with purpose and intent and meaning behind it, and that this issue is just going to get bigger and bigger, because in the aftermath of the pandemic, I think we should accept this new normal as the new normal and then adjust as things change in our society. This is something I deeply believe in, as in, don't make false timelines of we're out of COVID in 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, 2 years. Instead, this is it, right? You're going to be wearing a mask forever. And then as things change and get better, you just adapt to that. And I think that's really important, instead of, because otherwise you're going to constantly live in this, you know, space of anxiety and uncertainty that we're all experiencing. And I think we have to accept this as the new normal. And once you accept this as the new normal, then the big question is, what can I personally do to improve my mental health, right? There's a reason why in our study, it found that people are way happier about remote work now versus at the start of the pandemic, because there was an adjustment period. You know, a fourth of the global workforce never worked remote before March. So after this adjustment period, I think people got used to it and then saw the benefits. But as an individual, what I've learned from working remote for over 10 years is you got to construct your own calendar. You got to do a lot of this on your own terms and not expect your company to do it. So that's what the individual needs to do, take care of their own individual health and wellness. And at the same time, the company, and what we found, like the majority of workers, C-suite to employees, they think that companies should be doing more. The company should be doing more, not just in terms of providing the services that Emily and I outlined, but fostering a culture where it's okay to talk about your feelings. And so I think that will lend to a healthier future, which will also benefit a company's bottom line. It's not like these two things are separate. Oh, a company can't make money if they're helping employees' mental health. No, by helping an employee's mental health, they're going to be more effective, productive, stay with you longer. You're going to get all the higher degrees of engagement, all the things that we measure our workforce on.
Yeah, very, very true. Just have a look at the stream. There's one audience question here that says, okay, mental health is taking center stage. There must be opportunities for new companies to create new value and create a new organization. And there's some opportunity for startups to tackle mental health. Any views on that?
There are already startups tackling this mental health issue. So I completely agree. And I encourage our audience, if you have great ideas around building technology to promote mental health, please. This is our collective responsibility, and we need to all work on solving this together.
Very good. A very last little quick fire round. Then, what are some of the things that you personally do to keep your mental health in check and in control? I mean, for me, it was when the lockdown happened. I actually found it liberating, because I have three children, they're all at home. We had an amazing family life. It was a bit of a tricky bit juggling having kids at home, getting their schoolwork done remotely and my work. But actually for me, I don't want to ever go back to what I had before, where I was spending so much time on trains and planes going all across the world, wasting my life. And I think as long as you then, what I now focus on is exercise, eating well and taking breaks. And I feel I probably have a better work-life balance than ever before. So how about you two? Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I completely agree with you. I love working from home and spending all this quality time with my children. I used to travel a lot. This year I haven't been traveling as much. So we've taken the time to really bond as a family. The other thing that I do, I don't know whether you guys watched a recent video I posted on LinkedIn or not, but we actually raise chickens, and it's a great way for our kids to have fun when they're schooling from home. I do a lot of gardening. That's how I maintain my mental health. And I'm really hoping that even when we go back to normal, we can maintain some of those elements in our lives.
Wonderful. How about you, Dan?
So I relocated from New York to a suburb of Boston. And a lot of the reasoning was not just because of COVID, but just for more space and less pressure. Like I don't hear an ambulance, like my environment's changed basically. Mm. So what I did is I changed my environment and I got closer to friends and family. So I have a stronger support system here. And I think it's really important because in New York, especially, I'm hearing the ambulance 7 days a week, like throughout the day, every day. Here I like have to create noise sometimes because it's so quiet. So change my environment, more breaks, and then like reflecting on more of what I want to do and who I do want to do it with. So I think that a lot of people took this time over the past several months to reflect and to realize, like Emily realized clearly she's working from home. She's spending more time, you know, with her family. She realized or reinforced, hey, like family is number one. Like this is a better environment because this is what I prioritize. And I think that a lot of people have come to that realization. They already kind of knew it. This just validated and reinforced what they already knew about what matters in life.
Very good. Thank you very much. This was a very packed session. Lots of information, really important topic, great advice from you two. So thank you, Emily. Thank you, Dan, for joining me. I know you have to shoot off because you've got another live webinar to go to now. But thank you very much. And as always, anyone who wants to re-listen to them, to these conversations, head to my YouTube channel or subscribe to my podcast. So thank you very much and see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.